not used to this now. I have to learn it all over again. So nice to see you all. Thank you so much for coming. This is such a treat for me.
For us?
Well, good. It's a long way to come, I know. I've been thinking of what to say this afternoon and realizing how extremely uneventful my life is these days. So there are no real challenges, which is another kind of challenge, actually. So I've been following that around and letting it teach me what it has to say. The only real challenge I had was when they put me in this brace about a month ago. It's a big piece of plastic and more plastic all the way around the leg and straps to hold it tight. And then a big metal bar here that's attached to plastic and straps that go all around my waist. So I'm completely enclosed, it feels like, even though this leg can kick up a storm, I guess, but not very easily. And the first couple of nights sleeping in this, bound up like this, I felt I was going to explode, that it was holding me in a way that I couldn't endure. And I would switch and change my position and try to get comfortable, and then I'd change it again, and it made it worse. And suddenly I remembered one of our teachings, which is, if you're having trouble with something, turn around and face it. I thought, well, I'm doing that. No, you're not. Not at all. I wasn't accepting that this thing was happening at all. I wanted it to go away. I wanted it to be comfortable. I wanted it to be something else. And so I turned around and made friends with it. And it all was fine after that. It was just such a perfect example. And I felt like a dunce, you know. Don't you know? We've been talking about this for 30 years, and still, with each new situation, it's like we have to learn it all over again. Oh, that's what it means. Turn around and accept what it is. Doesn't mean we have to like it especially, but it doesn't mean we have to hate it and try to get rid of it either. It's just what is. And it's interesting. Then it becomes kind of interesting. So, this is what's happening. So, this is what people have to go through. And then begin to understand what other people's lives are like. There are lots of people who have to do this. And worse. I knew a man who was in an iron lung for almost his whole life. Brilliant man. He was one of the founders of the transpersonal psychology school. So that was the challenge that really gave me pause and was a wonderful teacher. The active one. And then this sort of passive one is also something to face. It's harder to face nothing going on than it is to face something going on. But only because I think I, for one, always want something to be going on. And there's a kind of loss. And to turn around and face the loss and think there wasn't anything there in the first place. What's to lose? And then everything becomes interesting. This whole slow little life becomes interesting. A hawk comes and visits me every now and then and sits on the dead branch right out there where I can see him beautifully. And lots of little birds come to the feeder. A Townsend warbler came the other day and flashed his beautiful yellow colors. And it makes my heart swell to see such things. It's so beautiful and so wonderful. It's not a whole lot to write home about. And in our situation, our culture, everything has to be very fast and very loud and very exciting, or it's not worth anything. And I found that these small things have such precious nature. Just the way the sun shines a little bit differently every day as the time is changing, the way the weather is changing as the year goes on. It's happening all the time, but I don't notice it usually as I'm zooming down Highway 17 trying to get somewhere. So in a way, this is a very, very wonderful situation. But I miss you all very much. So it seems like we're going to meet with Skype. If Britt,
fingers crossed.
Yes, Britt and Tom are working on it and trying to get it to be something that we can do on Tuesday night. It worked at Shikoji. It worked really, really well. We kept laughing because it was so amazing. You know, I was sitting in my little office, and they were sitting at the common room in Shikoji, and we were talking to each other. It was very, very cool. So why not do it this way? Yeah. So let's try it on Tuesday night. Can we do that?
Yes.
And experiment and see if we can make it go. And I'll bring out the Diamond Sutra again, and we can just pick up where we left off and carry on.
You remember where we left off?
No. Do you? I do, actually. I have it marked.
You do?
I do.
That's good.
I do.
We don't want to repeat anything.
I don't know what to do about handouts. Maybe I'll have to email them.
Yeah,
and, I could do that. Well, we'll have to figure that part of it out. So I brought up this, which is was just sent to me by Wisdom, by way of Dan, my old friend Dan Layton, Taigen. It's his latest book. And he said, please read it, and if it has any worth, tell your students about it. So I've read the first chapter, and it's really good. He writes so clearly and so plainly. His whole discussion of Zazen itself is just fine. Very simple and very, very fine. So I do recommend it. And the whole attitude is so not exactly laid back because he's a scholar, but it's pretty relaxed. And he cites not only Dogen and Hongzhi and all those ancient ones, but Mary Oliver and Bob Dylan and various Leonard Cohen, all the more contemporary Buddhists who are not Buddhists at all, except that they are in tune in the same way, and uses those as ways of a lot of Rumi in here, and Dogen's poems, Gary Snyder. He did this with a Bodhisattva book. He picked out various contemporary people like Martin Luther King as examples of different kinds of Bodhisattva practice. And he's doing the same kind of thing here about the kind of practice that different Bodhisattvas are living and expressing in our own time, in our own world. There's a huge question going on in our Zen teacher world about whether to be politically engaged or not. And it's a big debate, very heated debate. Some people definitely think that we should be involved and we should be out in the street, sitting zazen in the street with everybody. And other people think that the Dharma has nothing to do with that and we should stay off the streets and teach the Dharma. And I don't think that there will be any kind of agreement with that, because the people, there's so very, very strong opinions either way. But it's a part of what we're trying to struggle to understand as we bring the Dharma into our own life. How much of our life is the Dharma true for us? Where does it cut off? Or does it cut off at all? What does it mean to be political? Does that mean voting or running for office, or does that mean sitting in the street with a bunch of people? It's the kinds of questioning that Taigen is bringing up. He says Zen is full of questions and not so full of answers, and that if we wed ourselves to the answers, that we're just getting stuck in attachment in ways that aren't helpful. That best to stay open and agree to not know, mostly. We have to know somewhat. We have to know enough to get from point A to point B, and how to make our supper and how to make our living. But even in a sense, we don't know any of that either. That as we're being lived, we live our life. I don't know what's going to happen to the teachers. There are a bunch of them who are sitting in the street now and joining. And what will happen to the ones who are not? I think we need them both. And as usual, there isn't one thing or another. There's just the way it turns out for each one. And each one is brilliant in his own way, her own way, just as we are. And so we take our brilliance wherever we need to be. It doesn't really matter. I've had stuck up on close to my computer for the last couple of months this thing I found, but maybe in Red Pine, I'm not sure. It's by Chi Fo. Don't know who Chi Fo was. But this amuses me and also teaches me. It says, non-attachment to attachment is a most wonderful practice. Non-attachment to attachment. As for how it works, don't be attached to a self within or to others without or to any gift that passes between. When things appear, reflect and let them go. Non-attachment to attachment is the most wonderful practice. As for how it works, don't be attached to a self within, or to others without, or to any gift that passes between. When things appear, reflect and let them go. So I think attachment usually means an assumption about things, an ideal that creates a lot of pain when it doesn't live up to our expectations. It's about holding on to expectations when it's obvious that something else is going on. It's why our zazen is so such a gift, because as we sit, all of our assumptions begin to look silly. We begin to see how much we cook up, invent, all of our worries and concerns that are spinning around and driving us here and there or stopping us when we don't need to stop. All of it is just stuff to which we hold on. Our holding on gives us a sense of our life and ourself. But being attached to the self within and the what we meet outside, so-called outside, just makes a lot of anxiety. There's really not here in the way that we think. Our ideas, our thoughts, all of it is extra. And a very interesting and helpful extra as long as we don't cling to it. This fellow doesn't say, don't reflect. He says, just don't be attached to the self within or others without. He doesn't say throw it all away. Just see through it. See how oh, there's the hawk. He just settled. That first mossy tree out there, the lichen tree.
Oh, yes. It's a red shoulder. It's a Buteo. Red shoulder hawk. Isn't that something? The tail has black and white horizontal bars, and his wings are the same. And then he has a sort of robin's breast. Hawk Sazen, yeah.
Does he come to that branch?
Mm-hmm. That's his branch.
How long will he stay there?
Sometimes for an hour or so. Yeah. Yeah, sometimes I'll take my walk back and forth on the deck, mm-hmm. and he'll watch me. He's also watching the birds feeding at the feeder with great interest.
Do you think it could be a female?
The female is the bigger one.
Oh.
And I sometimes see them together and they look about the same size, but it's hard to tell.
I can see his breast now, how rosy it is.
Mm-hmm.
Daytime hunters mostly?
Yeah. And they get hungry in the rain because they out hunt in the rain.
Circle and cry. Is that usually when they're looking to hunt? I see them sort of mm-hmm. circling.
I don't know why they cry like that. So that was what I brought. Just this one little thing, really. And this little mystery thing in the middle of it, the self within or to others without or to any gift that passes between. Don't be attached to all the things that happen in between the self and other, that any of those things can create deep disappointment and agitation and anxiety and as long as we're attached to them. So he says, when things appear, reflect, meaning not just think about them, but take them in and let them go. Take it all in and let it all go. Something to add?
So you were indicating you had read that first chapter on Zazen.
Mm-hmm.
So when we were coming up today, that was the subject of our conversation. And that was that it seems that this particular week, all the Buddhist blogs have been talking about Zazen. And talking about the difference between sitting
mm-hmm.
On your zafu as opposed to sitting in your chair.
Oh, really?
Yes, and it's been, a really interesting read.
Yeah.
And you get those really extremely polar qualities, yes, in some of the blocks. And so I came up today with a question for you, and considering that right now you're having to sit in a chair, and a number of us sit in chairs, just what your feeling, your thought, your experience, having spent many, many years on a cushion and now you're sitting in a chair, what you might add to that kind of ongoing conversation?
Well, I think it's ideal to be able to sit on a cushion on the floor. That's an ideal.
That's the ideal.
For a lot of reasons, you're all of a piece with the ground that way. You're a little nubbin on the ground, which is a really nice way to be. And it's a yoga position. It's an essential yoga position that keeps the breath free to come and go, and if the spine is straight and if it's all in balance, then it's really beautiful experience to have that feeling of alignment with everything. But that isn't the point of zazen. The point isn't to have this luscious feeling of everything being perfectly in alignment. It's just helpful to allow oneself to accept what's there, what's here. So, which is what zazen is. So it ultimately doesn't make any difference at all where you sit or how you sit. And the hope is that learning to sit on a cushion or a chair, you take it out into the world and make it your constant attention to how you're actually being lived, rather than thinking you're calling all the shots, which is the result of sitting zazen. So I think I always recommend it. If people can do it, I think it's a wonderful thing to be able to do. It's harder to sit in a chair. I feel like a stalk of grass, you know. There's a little wavering, you know, every time the wind blows, I can't stay still. But that's okay. That's really okay. That isn't what it's about. It's about opening up and accepting and connecting with who we are, who we really are, and allowing that to be, and living it, and living from that place. So chair, bed, iron lung, it all works. Brace, lumpy chair. Yeah.
No, thank you. How much reading have you been able to do in this situation that you found yourself? Have you done a lot of reading?
Surprisingly not. Mm. In the beginning, I haven't had very much energy. Mm. It took a lot of it out of me, and then I started getting it back, and then it went away again, so I'm just getting it back again. It's been about 5 weeks since the hip went out, so I'm feeling stronger again. And I'm starting to read. I'm reading Dan's book, and I've also started reading the Surangama Sutra, which is a very nice book. The Soto School in America has put out a list of books that every Soto practicer should have read. Every sutra I get. No, even more. Zen Mind and Beginner's Mind is part of it, and a lot of other things. But all the sutras as well. The Heart Sutra, of course, and the Mirror Sutra, and the Sandokai, and all of those things. And the Surangama Sutra is one of them. It's not as old as the Heart Sutra. This is a translation from the Buddhist Text Translation Society, which is from 10,000 Buddhas up north. Master Wong, mm-hmm. students have put this together with commentary, all through with the master's commentary. And he's very clear, extremely clear. If you have a chance to read some of his things, he's often very funny, very very quirky kind of mind, very deep and wise, and happy to be funny sometimes. And this is it's the same thing. Of course, everybody is writing and saying just the very same thing. But it's said in a wonderful way, and it's a long book. Here's a chapter called Dangers May Arise with Advanced Practice.
So they did the translation, this new translation?
The students did, yeah. Yeah. The 57 Stages of the Bodhisattva's Faith. Establishing a Place for Awakening. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Establishing a Place for Awakening. On Killing. So, it's a conversation, as usual, between Ananda and Shariputra and the Buddha. So the Buddha's, you know, setting them straight and how they need to straighten up and get their minds around these new ideas. And they're all, oh gosh, Buddha, tell us more. No, it's very sweet.
They have, because I have some of their books, they're old paperbacks that they put out.
Yes.
I can see it right now, how it looks.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, if you go to 10,000 Buddhas, they have whole bookshelves full of that material. He translated a lot of things and did commentaries on them, and they're truly wonderful to read. Do you have them still?
Yeah, I still have
them. Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, is there anything else?
I imagine Occupy Wall Street seems like a far distance when you're sitting here, but it's. I've been reading those blogs, and they have just been full of Occupy this and Occupy
yes.
that.
Yes. Yeah.
And so it's interesting. What you shared with us, that was great. I appreciate it.
Yeah, there's one gal I know who has fibromyalgia, and she took herself down and went to sit one night. She just couldn't not go. She just thought it was so important.
Is this California?
It was Massachusetts where she was. She was in Boston. Yeah. So it's tricky. I always try not to talk about politics in the Zendo. It doesn't seem like something that's up for discussion. It just gets everybody hot under the collar.
Mm-hmm.
My way is the only way. But on the other hand, as some of the teachers have been saying, it's a moral issue that they're addressing in the occupation thing, and whether it's a good idea to talk about it that way or not, that it is something to address as a moral issue rather than political. political.
Right, it's not that far from the Tea Party's point of view.
Yeah.
As David Brooks noted the other night. But he doesn't think it will have much staying power because they've avoided leadership, and he thinks without structure it's just going to dissolve. It's not going to be effective.
Yeah, I heard him say that. Yeah.
See, she watches her news.
Of course.
Right. Yeah. I saw the Buddhist Peace Fellowship sitting in Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they're still there since it got a little nasty and confrontational.
Yeah, they often do that. Naley used to go down and sit at the naval, what do they call it? The Navy Yard, where they were shipping out stuff to Vietnam in the years of Vietnam. Getting arrested. You know, there was a whole Berkeley Buddhist group that was allowing themselves to get arrested against the Vietnam War. So it's certainly part of the tradition. It's like Koban's master, who had a big library because he was a teacher, for one thing, and he was very interested in everything that was going on. And so he had a lot of books from America and a lot of books on democracy. And the cops came or the army came at a certain point during the war and wanted to see his library, and he wouldn't let him in. He said, "You'll just have to kill me to get to see my library. You can't see it." Hmm. And he kept it all.
Wow.
It's a brave thing to do.
Is this Uchiyama Rishi?
No, this is Kotaiji-sama.
Oh.
Hozan Koe.
That was his. That's his dharma.
That's his dharma name.
His name.
Yeah. Or Chino Roshi.
Okay.
That's his everyday name.
Hozan Koe. So that is Chino when we chant. When we chant the ancestors. I didn't know that.
Yeah. He was a burly guy with a very deep voice. And I can imagine he would do that, you know, just like,
very samurai.
No way. No way are you going to look at my library. Well, shall we have some tea?